Welcome back to our first episode of the Baseball Never Sleeps podcast in quite some time. This is episode 20. I'm Simon Farber. Of course, my partner is Nick Lancioni. And with baseball getting ready to start back up in 7 days from today, Thursday, July 16th, we thought we'd have NBC Sports Chicago's and ESPN 1000's David Kaplan on the show to talk Cubs and White Sox restart. Dave was a lot of fun to have on the show. He had some great breaking news stories for us. Unfortunately, Nick's microphone did malfunction a little bit, but we do have his audio saved on there. It's a bit grainy, but we're making it work for now. All right, let's get to the show. On today's episode, we're super excited to welcome NBC Sports Chicago and ESPN 1000's David Kaplan. And Cap, we're so close to getting back to baseball. But how are you keeping yourself busy in these last few weeks before everything heats up?
So I didn't take any time off of the radio and finally decided, you know what, I got all this vacation that I'm not going to be able to use. I was supposed to be in Europe covering the Cubs in England, and then my wife and I were going to go to France. And so obviously all that with the pandemic was canceled. So a friend of mine has a house out in California where – in Palm Springs, it gets, today, it'll be 112. So
wow.
My wife and I like the heat. It's a dry heat. And he said, take the house. He said, I leave in April. I don't come back to Palm Springs until the beginning of November. So we've been out here for almost 2 weeks. We leave on Saturday. And well, I'll tell you what, I'm out doing my walk while I'm talking to you guys. I try to go 8-9 miles in a day. It's before the sun gets really blazing, but it's awesome.
Have you been able to hit the links at all, Cap?
He lives on a golf course, so I've gone out and played the par 5 behind his house a number of times, but I have not played 18. My wife will play, but she's not a huge golfer. I'm by myself. I've been working. I'm still doing all my TV stuff from California because everything's on Zoom. So it's been,
Oh, wow.
You know, just a real good break to get out here to just enjoy being with my wife, and all our meals we're eating at the house. We went to the grocery store a few times, and that's it, because I'm doing all I can, so is she, just to protect ourselves. And then I get quarantined anyway. When I get back to Chicago, Mayor Lightfoot said nobody who's been in one of the 15 hotspots can come to the city of Chicago for 14 days. So I'll be doing radio from home for the next 2 weeks, starting Monday.
Cap, you said it yourself. Obviously, this has been a crazy time with so many different adjustments. And you mentioned that you're doing Zoom calls and still doing your TV work from California. How difficult has that been? Have you run into a lot of obstacles?
The TV portion has not been difficult because I do Sports Talk Live, I do a Cubs Talk podcast, I do Baseball Night in Chicago as a guest on Layla's show, I do The Rush, which is our Facebook Live show, and those all are pretty fast moving, and I, like Sports Talk Live, have a panel there, and so there's four of us, and in a 30-minute show, it flies pretty quickly. I'm more of a traffic cop. Radio, you sit down, it's 9 a.m., and I got Danny and Chris, who are the best, but you got 3 hours, man. You better be entertaining. And if you're not, people are not going to waste their time with you. And if they don't waste their time with you, your bosses aren't going to waste time with you as well. So it's been a challenge. I think it was the 16th. Was that a Monday back in March? Yeah, the 16th, when we started having to do radio with no live sports. And I said to Danny Zetterman and Chris Black, who, as I say, are awesome, the guys, when Mitchell Trubisky throws 4 TDs or 4 interceptions, it's easy. It's stealing. Once you build up some equity with your audience, hey, Mitchell Trubisky, blah, 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 phone lines light up, you steal for 3 hours. It's easy.
Right.
No sports, you better be creative. So it's been a great challenge.
Yeah, you mentioned you're still doing a couple of different things at NBC Sports, but as we all know, they're no longer covering Cubs games. Do you feel like you have a different role now there, not directly doing Cubs pregame and postgame? And are you disappointed or that you won't have that kind of role in your career right now?
No, I'm not disappointed because I had the opportunity to go to Marquee. They made me a very nice offer. And I just like who I work for, who I work with, and the shop that I work at NBC Sports Chicago. So it was not me saying no to Marquee. It was me saying yes to NBC. And my late father, may he rest in peace, said to me about a year before he died, he said, I want to ask you a question. What do you have as a goal in your career? I said, I don't know, Dad. I'm in a pretty good spot right now. He said, well, let me just tell you this. People are going to come to you with job offers. People are going to have ideas. Well, you've gotten to this stage of your career, so the next move naturally is that. Don't ever run from happiness. If you're happy, who cares what other people think you should be doing? You do what's best for you, for David. Be you. And that's way before Matt Nagy ever came to Chicago. I had BU written down in my office. So that's how I live, and I'll still cover the Cubs. I just won't be the pre- and post-game host.
That's awesome.
We're glad to hear that you're happy doing what you're doing, and you obviously keep so many of us happy while we're listening to you and watching you on TV. And one thing that I personally really enjoy when I do watch you on TV or listen to you on the radio is the amount of emotion that you'll add onto your takes or opinions. You keep it completely real with all viewers and listeners. I'll just Google David Kaplan goes off, and there'll be 20 videos of you with different takes and videos just exploding on the Chicago Cubs, which I think is awesome. With that being said, what was the most frustrating moment you've had covering the Cubs in your career, and what has been the happiest moment covering the Cubs?
Wow, that's a good one. Simon and Nick, first of all, it's great to be with you guys just to talk sports and just to have some fun. But obviously the night that they clinched to win the World Series was an amazing, incredible night and something that I can never top in my sports broadcasting career. Like if you had told me a year ago, hey, man, there's going to be a global pandemic, no sports of any kind. Yeah, right. Uh-huh. And here we are. So never say never. I've told this story many times. I work out at a health club called the East Bank Club in Chicago. And 15 years ago, I would come in every day, and my fat body would come in getting ready to go lift weights, and there would be this one gentleman, 3-4 lockers down, and it was like two ships passing in the night. It would be, hey, man, how you doing? It's noon every day. Good, how are you? You having a good day? Yeah, good. All right, have fun. And that was the extent of our conversations. And he was a Sox fan. I was a Cubs fan. So I'd give him a hard time about the Sox. He'd give me a hard time about the Cubs. And this guy, who I just knew to be a very nice man, turned out to be Barack Obama.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So my point is, we never know what's coming around the next corner, whether you're going to meet the guy who become one of the most powerful men in the history of the world, or we're going to have a global pandemic, or after 108 years, the Chicago Cubs are going to come from 3-1 down, and they're actually going to win the World Series. So, for me, winning that World Series was incredible, but going to it and clinching at Wrigley might be the coolest night of my life as a broadcaster, because it had been 71 years. And I'm sitting at Wrigley getting ready to go out with my best friend, Todd Hollinsworth. And all of a sudden, we clinch. We shut out the Dodgers. We beat Clayton Kershaw. Are you kidding? And we're going to the World Series. So that was a pretty amazing night. The lowest was the night, not the Bartman night. I was working. It was the next night when they blew a lead, Kerry Wood hit this home run, it was dramatic, and then they end up losing. That one was the worst.
And we've asked some Cubs people around 2003. It sounds crazy that not everybody's into superstition and whatnot, but did it really feel like they were cursed when everything kind of would just go wrong every time?
You know, I never believed, and still don't believe in all that stuff, but there were moments where you've got to be kidding me. Mm-hmm. You really got to be kidding me. Like, I remember coming back from Florida. They had won. They'd split at home, so it's 1-1. They win Friday. they win Saturday. It's 3-1 Cubs. And I said to my boss from Tribune Company, hey, man, we got to go to breakfast on Sunday morning before the game. We had breakfast Friday. We had breakfast Saturday. We've won them both. We can't change anything. And then Josh Beckett beats them. Now it's 3-2 coming home. Pryor and Wood, it's over. We got this. And obviously we didn't have it. So there were moments. I remember Ben Zobrist telling me that when Rajay Davis hit the home run, he literally looked up and went, is there really a goat curse? Because nobody saw that coming off of Aroldis Chapman. So all cool moments in my career, and all I know is that before I retired as a pre-post host, where I did it for 25 straight seasons, the Cubs won the World Series, and I was on the mic. It was really cool.
Cap, personally for me, I happen to be very superstitious, particularly with the Blackhawks. I actually wore the same jersey. I had two rally towels on my head, and I had these light-up batons, and I would wear them for every single Hawks playoff game, and I was convinced that I was helping them win these games. I have to say, I am a very superstitious person.
Okay, so you're superstitious, and I try to tell you that I don't want to believe in that stuff, but I am like you, and I was a season ticket holder for many years for the Blackhawks. And when they had a playoff game that went to overtime, whether it was at the United Center and I'm sitting in my seat with my wife, or they're on the road and I'm in front of the TV at home, I had a rule that once the puck dropped on overtime, home or away, that I could not sit down until the game ended.
Wow.
That meant between periods, too.
Blackhawks,
yeah, they were doing 2-OT, 3-OT games almost every series.
And so I would be at the United Center, my wife sitting in our seats, and I'm next to her but down in the entryway to our section, section 212, and the usher finally just stopped hassling me because I told her, hey, I'm not sitting down because if I do, they're going to score. And one game, they had an overtime game. I don't remember if it was 2010 or 2013. And I sat down and then went, oh, I can't sit down. And the other team scored right away. I went, I told you. That's on me. That's my fault. That never happened again.
That's the kind of thing that will stick with you forever. You'll never make the same mistake again.
Right.
So when you're watching a game, obviously in person is a different environment, but when you're at home, are you a loud fan or are you the quiet fan that kind of just sits in silence and holds emotion? Or are you a shouter?
I think you can know where that answer comes from.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a loud person. That's just who I am. I'm the guy who can be out on his morning walk and I have conversation with 10 different people who I don't know. I literally can have a conversation with a rock. that's just how I am. And so when I'm watching a game and last year Joe Maddon got really mad at me and I'm okay with that. I'm going to be real. I'm going to be me. And he and I have cleared the air since at the winter meetings in San Diego last December, but he was ticked, really ticked, because if you remember the game last summer, Cubs are playing. It's a late night game, not on NBC Sports Chicago. So I'm off. But I'm obviously up, and I'm going to watch it because I have to do the game the next day. And Steve Cishek comes in. He walks the first guy. He walks the second guy. And it's the bottom of whatever, 15th inning. And I said to my wife, what in the H is this guy doing? He can't find the strike zone. Joe, get him out. Now he walks the third guy. And now he throws a wild pitch. Ball game over, or he walks the guy in, Cubs lose. And I grab my phone, and that's why you should holster your Twitter sometimes late at night when you're emotional. and I cut this video just crushing Joe Maddon. I'm not crushing Steve Cishek. I'm crushing Joe Maddon because everyone can have a bad game. But the manager's job to go, all right, my guy doesn't have it. I don't care if I got to pitch Tim Buss, the strength coach, or Otis Hellman, the head of the club, I'll pitch somebody else. This guy I got out there can't do it. And I just blasted him. And boy, oh boy, I bumped into Joe a week later at Wrigley, and he was none too pleased with me. But we have a good relationship, and he understood it was my passion coming out.
That's hilarious. Do you think he follows you on Twitter, or does he have somebody passing along info that, hey, Cap is ripping you to shreds?
Well, when the video gets 50, 60,000 views, he's going to know about it.
That's wild. Cap, one of the things, you're not super involved in the breaking news game, but we have to imagine you get a little inside scoop here and there. How do you handle that, and how badly do you just want to spill the beans to the rest of the baseball world?
Well, I'll correct you, because I actually am involved in the breaking news game a lot. In fact, I got named News Finder of the Year by the Associated Press several years ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, my bad on that.
I've broken a ton of stories, and I pride myself on those. Now, I've always said, I am not a journalist between 9 and noon. I'm not. I'm an entertainer, and I want you, whether you agree with me or disagree with me, I want you to be entertained enough that you go, all right, what time is it? 9 o'clock, put Cap show on. Because if I'm not at the top of your mind at 9 o'clock, I'm doing something wrong. It's not on you, it's on me. But I also love the break news, whether it was back in the day, Albert Bell to the White Sox, Alfonso Soriano to the Cubs. You know, I'll tell you a quick one. So Kevin O'Neill, remember Kevin O'Neill? He was the basketball coach at Northwestern, USC, Tennessee, Marquette, and the Toronto Raptors.
We're both only 20 years old, so that might be a little before us, but
no question. He was the head coach at Northwestern from like 98 to 2001, so you were babies. Or not around. Well, Kevin's my best friend, and we've been best friends since 1983. So I knew that Kevin was the top choice at Northwestern because I was helping Northwestern try and get him while he had a really good 20-win team at the University of Tennessee. So now I can't violate the trust my friend has put in me, even though I'm picking up the Sun-Times and the Tribune, and they're listing the final five candidates for the Northwestern job. Should be announced any day, Northwestern's narrowed it to five, and he's not listed, and I already know he's taking the job. Yes, this is a true story.
That's amazing.
He calls me one night. He said, hey, man, can you pick Martha and I, that's his first wife, Martha and I up at the airport. Our plane gets in at 6:15. They're going to do a press conference at 11. Can you pick us up? Of course. I get to the airport. Now, this is pre-9/11, so you could walk to the gate back then. I'm at the gate, and this guy turns and looks at me. He goes, what the hell are you doing here? I said, I'm meeting a friend. He's like, oh, he was the athletic director at Northwestern. You know, he's trying to figure out how in the hell does he know what's going on here? Kevin comes off the plane, walks right past the AD, and hugs me and kisses me and goes, we're back together again, kid. And he goes over and hugs the AD, and the AD just shakes his head and says, I had no idea. So now I break the story. Goes everywhere. Guy's leaving Tennessee to take the Northwestern job, which back in the day was unheard of. Now Gary Barnett is the head coach of the football team. He leaves and he takes the Colorado job. Kevin is in the travel office at Northwestern picking up a plane ticket for a recruit. Because, again, late 90s, 2000, 2001, you didn't have an iPhone where they sent an something to your app, and that's all you showed. You had to get a freaking paper ticket. He's there, and while they're going to print off his ticket, he looks down on the desk, and there's the itinerary. It says, our new head football coach, Randy Walker, may he rest in peace, from Miami of Ohio. And here's his flight arrangement. So he calls me. He's like, you didn't get this from me, but I think they're hiring Randy Walker to replace Gary Barnett. So now how am I going to confirm all of this? I can't just go on what he happened to see on a desk. So I called up the airline, and I thought, let's see, he's the coach at Miami of Ohio, so he'd be flying out of Cincinnati. I think it's Delta has a hub there. So I called Delta Airlines. Lady goes, Delta Airlines, how may I help you? I said, hi, my name is Randy Walker, and I am supposed to fly to Chicago in the morning with my wife, and my secretary has not left my itinerary. So the lady goes, I can help you, Mr. Walker, no problem. Blah, 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 looks. Yes, you're on the 6 a.m. flight number, blah, 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 and it's your wife's returns tomorrow night. Yours is open-ended. You can come back whenever you want. I said, that's awesome. Can you tell me one other thing? Do I need to bring my credit card to pay for the ticket, or did my secretary take care of it? Your tickets are prepaid by Northwestern University. I'm like, bam, I got it. So I go to the airport. Now, I don't know Randy Walker at all. There's no Google Images where you go look. So I'm trying to think, how am I going to identify this guy? I'm standing at the gate, and the athletic director's assistant looks at me. He goes, what are you doing here? I said, like I told your boss 2 years ago, I'm meeting a friend. And he laughs. I see this guy get off the plane who looks like a football coach, and he's got a purple tie on, and his wife gets off behind him and has a purple scarf around her neck. I'm like, they just went and bought purple because there's a press conference today. And I break the story. And I have a letter that I actually just found again maybe 2 weeks ago during this pandemic. I've been cleaning out some of my drawers. And in the drawer, there's a letter from the athletic director back then, Rick Taylor, said, dear Cap, congrats on breaking another story. You can promise that if I have to make another high-profile search while I'm at Northwestern, I will reroute him through three cities.
That's amazing. It's
funny. So that's just a couple of the stories that I've broken. And, I mean, there, I can give you a billion different stories about him, but I love breaking news.
That's some incredible ways to just verify a source. And, I mean, those are some unorthodox ways. I mean, does it get as interesting as that usually? Or, I mean, is it a much more strict and usually set way of handling a story and verifying it?
All right, let me give you one more. You guys got time for another one?
Oh, of course.
A lot of time. Thanks again for being with us today.
It's a pleasure and an honor to be on your show. So it's 1989. My friend Kevin O'Neill is the assistant coach at this time. It's the 89 NCAA tournament. It's going to start in 2 days. This is a Tuesday night. And Kevin calls me. He's the top assistant at the University of Arizona. He calls me, he's like, dude, you're not going to believe this, but I have a dear friend who is on the board of trustees at Arizona State. Now, Kevin's at University of Arizona, the arch rival. But he said, a dear friend of mine is actually on the board of trustees. He told me they're hiring Bill Frieder as their new head coach. Now, you guys don't remember Bill Frieder, but Bill Frieder was the head coach at Michigan for a long, long time. And was a really good coach, really good. And Arizona State had fallen on hard times, and they were willing to spend basically whatever it took to try and win. So I said to Kevin, hold on a minute. The NCAA tournament starts in 2 days, and Frieder can win the national championship. Now, Michigan's loaded. He said, just telling you, they're going to fly him out on Wednesday morning, name him, and then he's going to go from there and fly to coach Michigan. I'm thinking to myself, okay, there's a story here. So Doug Collins was the coach of the Bulls. He's doing the Chet Kopic radio show in Chicago. And Chet was my mentor. Chet gave me my start. I call into the radio show off the air. I said, tell Chet I have to talk to him. It's urgent. He goes to a break, picks up the phone, and goes, what's up? Said, you're not going to believe this, but I believe I've nailed down that Bill Frieder is going to be named tomorrow as the head coach of Arizona State. He's like, no chance. There's no way a guy with a top 10 team is quitting 2 days before the NCAA tournament. Said, I'm just telling you, I'm 99% positive. He's like, all right, get it to 100% callback. Well, Doug Collins had been the assistant at Arizona State before he took the Bulls job. He calls me during that break and goes, Cappy, there's no chance that's happening. I know the people at Arizona State. There is no way they're paying the money to get that guy. Said, I'm going to call you guys back in a few minutes. So now, how am I going to nail this down? Well, I call Northwest Airlines, same deal like I did with Randy Walker. This was the first time I actually used this scam. I call Northwest because he's based out of Ann Arbor. He's going to fly out of Detroit. Northwest Airlines back then, that was their main hub. Same deal. Yes, the tickets for Angela and Bill Frieder are paid for by Arizona State University. Bam!
Wow.
I got it.
Wow.
Call back. Chet puts me on. And he says to me before we go on the air, okay, I'm going to trust you on this. If you're right, I'll help you to my dying day. And he died a year ago. If you're wrong, you'll never work in this business. So just, you want to go on? Are you that confident? I said, Chet, I'm 100%, pal. He's getting this job. So they schedule me to come on. Well, the assistant coach at Michigan at the time, associate head coach, the guy named Steve Fisher, who's been the head coach at San Diego State till he retired a couple years ago, and is a very good friend. Steve Fisher, I call his house. He does not answer. It goes to voicemail. I leave this message, and he and I still laugh about it to this day. I said, hey, Fish, it's Cap. I already know Breeder's getting the Arizona State job. Don't ask me how I know. Are they naming you the interim head coach? If that's true, just pick up the phone and go, I can't comment. He picks up the phone and he goes, don't know how you got it. I can't comment. So now I go on the air and I tell Chet and Doug Collins, not only is Frieder going to be named the head coach at Arizona State tomorrow, which is national news, but he's also out. Bo Schembechler is going to fire him and say, I want a Michigan man coaching Michigan, not the Arizona State head coach. And that's exactly what happened. It was national news, front page of USA Today, one of the top 10 teams. Their coach resigns or gets fired 2 days before the tournament kicks off. And Steve Fisher goes on to lead Michigan to the national title. Crazy.
Wow. Wow. That's crazy that a coach would just pick up and leave right before the tourney. I almost feel like that would never happen.
He got paid big time. So
that's insane.
He saw a chance to set up his family because money was different back then. Like when I was at Northern, I was the assistant at Northern Illinois from 82 to 86. Our head coach is in the Illinois Basketball Hall of Fame. He's the winningest coach in school history still. He was making $40,000 a year my last year there. $40,000.
Wow.
And then he'd make another five or six off of camp. That was it. And now you got guys, even at the MAC level with Northern or Ohio, you're making $400,000 a year. So shows you how things are different.
Talking about things being different, transitioning back to baseball, there's been a few changes this season. We don't know if they're going to stick around, but we wanted to ask you, as a longtime National League fan, your stance on first the universal DH on both leagues, and then this extra innings rule with the pinch runner starting on second base to begin extra innings. How do you feel about that?
Well, in terms of the universal DH, you know, if you rewind 15 years ago, traditionalist David Kaplan would go, oh, that's stupid. I don't like the DH. You know what? I'm tired of watching Pedro Strop pull his hamstring, to John Lester strike out. Yeah, and he's a big man, and he may end up hitting a home run once out of every 2,000 at bat. But how many times have you watched a game in the National League with your favorite team, whoever that is, and you're down 4-2 in the sixth, and your pitcher's actually pitching decent, and you get two men on, the eight hitter's coming up with two outs, and they walk the eight hitter to get to the pitcher who strikes out. Or you're forced to use a pinch hitter, and they have to take your guy out. I completely changed 5-6 years ago, and I'm thrilled that the DH is in, and it's in to stay. It's not going away now. So I'm really happy that the DH is in. Leads to more offense. good for the Cubs, just good for the game. Play by the same rules. It'd be like the AFC doesn't allow field goals and the NFC does. It's just stupid. Play the, either get rid of it everywhere, okay, I'll live with that, or have it in both leagues. And so that's what they've done. So I'm thrilled. The runner on second, I never liked, but Jed Hoyer called me one day. He said, I just heard you on the air blasting that rule. This is 5 years ago. He was ahead of his time with this. And he said, let me just tell you something. When we go 17 innings, it crushes our bullpen to the point where I'd rather lose the game in 9 than win in 18. I'm just telling you. He said, this is going to happen someday. And that was 5 years ago.
Oh, wow. So
enough, here it is.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to ask, you think that might be a long-term thing that they keep this rule around further?
I guess we'll have to wait and see how it plays out. I could tell you that if it was left up to Jed Hoyer, it would never go away. And Theo feels the same way.
Cap, we're on to our last segment. We actually created this just for you, and it's called Cap or No Cap. And the cap spelled with K, of course, because your last name. And basically, we will ask you, or we will read out a statement, and you will either say cap, believing that that's not true, or no cap, thinking that it is true. So the first question is, the Cubs will win the NL Central this season, cap or no cap?
No cap. They absolutely can win the NL Central. They have a lot of talent. I think their division is down, and really do.
All right, the second one. The Cubs will re-sign or extend Chris Bryant over the next 20 months.
Cap, no. Now,
you don't see
if
it?
Comes, no. Now, look, I want to just set the record straight. And I've done this on my show, and I'm going to do it here on your podcast that everyone listens to. Chris Bryant, if you remember, 3 months ago at spring training, back in, what was it, February, March, he has a press conference, and he goes, I don't know where all this rumor came about me turning down a contract extension, and he mentions me by name. Cap and I have a good relationship. I don't know where he would come up with that. Let me just tell you, see how stern I can be and strong. It was 100% that he was off a monster extension and turned it down out of the 2016 World Series. That's fact. It's not cap speculate. It's fact. And his agent, Scott Boras, said, no, come on. Chris, why would you do that? Well, I guess nobody could predict the global pandemic, but the Cubs would not give him what they offered him in 2016 today. Nobody knows what the finances are. So is Chris Bryant going to take significantly less to stay here? Maybe. That's the only way it happens. But I can promise you, they're not signing him to a monster extension based on the numbers that they offered him in 2016, even though he's a hell of a player and he's a really good guy.
All right, Cap, our last question. It had to be a White Sox one since we're both White Sox fans. The White Sox.
And let me just be clear. I'm also a White Sox fan. I'm a Cubs guy, but I love this young White Sox team. Love it.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it. It should be an exciting season. So the last question is, the White Sox will reach the ALCS in the next 2 seasons, cap or no cap?
Reach the ALCS in the next 2 seasons. I'm going to say no cap. Now,
they have
a lot of payroll flexibility. You look at the Cubs, their roster is bloated with bad payroll. Tyler Chatwood, they're paying, whatever it is to John Lester this year and Jason Hayward, and I can keep going on. They're at $215 million or so. White Sox are half of that. Like 120, and so maybe even less than that. So they have room to go and make a splashy signing in the offseason. So yeah, I'm all over this White Sox team. I absolutely think they can go to the ALCS.
All right, we accidentally skipped one, but we have one last one to add. Cap or no cap, Major League Baseball will make it through this regular season without being shut down.
No cap. I absolutely agree that they're going to play. I think that guys are taking this seriously. And if some idiot feels it's more important that he's out in the bars or out doing whatever it is he's going to do, good luck to him. Then he needs to be quarantined and kept away from the rest of the team. But when you have a veteran team with a veteran manager in Ricky Renteria or a guy in David Ross who may not be a veteran manager, but he's a veteran of the game, and guys respect him, they're going to take it seriously. This is how they make a living. It's not a game. It's not Little League. And they all want to get paid. They want to compete. They want to try and win a World Series. So I think they will get through it.
I'm really hoping it works out because it'll be almost 5 full months without sports before this gets started again. I mean, the entire country is excited to see this get back and going. It would be such a heartbreaker for them to say in mid-August, we got to bag it up.
Agreed. I'm just hopeful that we can get whatever it is accomplished in sports, basketball, hockey, baseball. I don't know how they're going to pull this football thing off. Maybe they can. I saw Jim Harbaugh's comments yesterday, and I like Jim. He's a nice man. That was some of the dumbest stuff I've ever read, where I don't see how sports and football make it worse. Hey, Jim, how do you think they transmit the virus? So, you know, at least in baseball, center fielder is socially distanced from the entire stadium.
Yeah.
I had a son who was a college football offensive lineman, and we were talking about it, and he goes, I got spit in my face every play.
Oh.
It's not the way it is, because you're banging heads, and that's what happens. So, yeah, I thought that was a dumb comment. So I don't know about football, but I'm hopeful the other three play.
Well, we'll just have to kind of hope and wait for the next couple weeks to pass. But David Kaplan, we had a great time talking baseball with you. Thanks so much for coming on the show and sharing some of the great stories from your career. And we're looking forward to seeing you back on the TV soon.
Yep, I'll be on this afternoon. But anytime you guys want me, keep my number. I love talking sports.
Thanks so much, Kaplan.